Hey, Orthopreneurs, it's Dr. Glenn Krieger here, and let me tell you, the Orthopreneurs 2024 Summit, which is going to be on a Royal Caribbean ship, has taken off. I don't mean literally, but we actually booked an entire ship just for us. We started selling it already, and believe it or not, it's selling out fast. People want to come by themselves. People want to bring their team. People want to bring their families. Remember, there's a kids club there, and there's also an adult-only pool. So you can watch the presentations streaming throughout the whole ship. Imagine sitting in the pool with a drink in your hand, watching someone speak on tips and tricks to help your practice get better while you're sitting knee-deep in a pool with a drink in your hand. Sounds pretty cool, right? Well, you've come to know the kind of meetings we put together, and this one's going to be even more exceptional and even more affordable. Go to opsummit2024.com to sign up now.
Colleagues said, hey, you know, there were only a couple of ortho groups at the time. And I was peripherally aware of them, but not really super involved in them. And somebody said, there's no group just for female orthodontists. They sort of have a special set of circumstances that they're dealing with. And you have been blogging and stuff, and I think you should do it. And I'm like, what? Like, I wouldn't even know where to begin. But then I jumped right in. I started it. Ben Burris was running Ortho 101, and he put a post, hey, Courtney, open this women's group. And all of a sudden, a flood of people came over.
This is the Orthopreneur Show with Glenn Krieger, talking about the things you never learned in school, like marketing, management, and leadership.
Hello there, Orthopreneurs, and welcome to another episode of the Orthopreneurs Podcast. Today is going to be a great day, a great story in front of us here, a great person who's going to really enchant us with some great tales that maybe many of us aren't privy to, and you'll learn why. Please welcome to the show, Courtney Dunn. Welcome.
Hi, thank you.
Yeah, my pleasure to have you. This is a long time coming. I'm so thrilled to have you here. And for those of you who may not know Courtney Dunn, I think you're probably living under a rock somewhere if you don't know her. And I'm going to let her tell her story in her words in just a moment. But, you know, she's, I think founder would be a good word, right? The founder of Women in Orthodontics Facebook group, as well as the annual meeting. But let's start here. You know, if you don't mind, Courtney, if you can give everybody a little short history, if you will, how did you end up where you are today? How did you get to this moment in time?
Yeah, sort of like everybody's story, there's no like clear path for me. Like when I was growing up, I thought I was going to be a physician. I was really inspired by my neighbor who was an orthopedic surgeon, and I thought he was amazing. He was the team doctor for the Phoenix Suns, and I thought that that was the coolest thing in the world because we would get to sit in the Suns box, and my brother got to go into the locker room while I was sitting outside waiting, and I just thought that that was the coolest thing ever. And then I got to undergrad and I was just like, yeah, I'm not really interested in this. So I decided to go to dental school. I loved the relationships. I did some shadowing and I loved the relationships that dentists had with their patients and the fact that those were like sort of long-term relationships and you really got to know families and you were part of the community. And so I just absolutely loved that. Became interested in orthodontics late in dental school and you know, here I am. I met my husband in dental school. He wanted to be an orthodontist his entire life. So it was kind of interesting. Two people who I sort of stumbled on it later and he like his entire life pretty much knew that that's what he wanted to be. And so we were married right out of dental school, which was at the University of Michigan. Go Blue. It's been a very exciting year for us. We did ortho residency at the University of Michigan. We had two of her children when I was in residency. And then we went back to Phoenix. And the reason we went back to Phoenix was because that's where I was from. I wanted to be closer to family. My parents were telling me how much the area was growing. So it seemed like a really good opportunity. And so we opened our very first practice in the very western suburbs of Phoenix, which used to sort of be farmland. And my dad's a farmer. And so that was an area I was familiar with. And so we're like, yeah, let's do that. And we were going to be this one location, two doctor practice. That's how it was going to work. It was going to be great. And about a year in, we were like, dang, it's going to take a long time to build a practice to a two doctor practice, like a completely scratch practice, right? And we ended up buying a second location when the doctor had passed away unexpectedly. And it was just sort of never a plan, but we just once again kind of stumbled upon it. And so we started to be a two location practice. And then we got really excited about the business of orthodontics. And so a few years later, we opened a third scratch practice. And then a few years later after that, we purchased another practice. So now we're a four location practice in the greater Phoenix area. And we sort of live in the middle of all four locations and we rotate between them. And it's been quite an adventure.
That's awesome. Your story is a great story. Like you said, your dad's a farmer. Did you literally grow up on a working farm?
No, I did not grow up on a working farm. So it's kind of interesting the way farms work sort of here in Arizona is I lived in the city of Phoenix and then my dad would drive out to that West Valley and farm every day. But, you know, he's actually a Rose farmer. So, and that whole story of his farm is really interesting because it started out as cotton, went into onions and melons. And I kind of watched this and this whole thing growing up. My parents had me really young, so I got to watch the evolution of this. And now it's this massive Rose farm. My brother's taken over the farm. And so it's really not, it's part of me, but at the same time, like I didn't grow up working on the farm, but I did make my kids go work on the farm. So I felt like they really needed to appreciate hard work. They needed to appreciate where they came from. My dad used to get up 4 a.m. and drive out to the farm and sometimes wouldn't come home until, you know, 7 or 8 at night. And so I watched that work ethic, you know, my entire life. And I lived a small business owner's life, you know, when everything was feeling great and we were able to go on ski trips and it was amazing, to my dad just going like, I really wanted to go to private school for high school. And he was just like, I just don't know if we can afford it. And so there were lots of highs and lots of lows, but that was just normal for me. Right. And so I just always had that desire to be a business owner and kind of be in charge. And so even though it's a totally different business, you know, it still helped a lot to live it.
That's awesome. I mean, I knew a lot of people who grew up in farms, right? Whether it's a working farm or dad did exactly what your dad did. They're some of the most grounded human beings I'd ever met. You know, So I grew up with the son of a dentist, right? And my mom went back to law school when she was, when we were kids. Believe it or not, back in the 70s, dad had some trouble with the practices. Mm-hmm. And my mother went back to school with what she later found out was MS. To school full time with 2 growing kids. I think I was probably about 10 years old. My sister was 7. And so I got to watch her, you know, wake up, take care of the kids, go to school, come home, make dinner. You know, dad was still at work and he'd come home late. And, you know, I think there's such a value in watching your parents. I don't want to use the word struggle because nobody wants to watch your parents struggle. But I think there's a value in watching your parents work hard.
Yeah.
Like just like put everything they have into their job. You think that in some ways, more than some, in large ways, sort of impacted your work ethic today, having seen what they went through?
Completely. And it's really interesting because my parents had me young, I remember everything and my siblings don't.
Really?
And the difference between me and my siblings in sort of how I valued money, how I appreciated what I was spending, that kind of stuff. I mean, I love my siblings, they're great, but like my sister was much more spoiled than me. And so she expected certain things when it came to like what kind of car she was going to get in high school, like designer clothes, this or that, where like, I never really had that because like, I remember the struggles. And so I didn't have that expectation because my parents did really well in the end, but I didn't live that really well. Like I was in college before I realized, oh, my parents are doing really well. Like, you know, like it didn't even occur to me because it was like, it was such a struggle for so long. And, you know, I didn't want to have that struggle. And obviously when we started a scratch practice and stuff, we struggled and I was like, oh God, like I didn't want to live this. Like it's hard. And I just felt like the little fish in the big pond. And I think that my oldest will remember that more, where my other children probably won't again. And so we try really hard to even now be like, no, like we can't afford that. Even though we kind of can't afford it.
Yeah. Like, don't listen to this podcast.
Yeah. Don't listen to the podcast. Right. But you know, like, oh, like, no, we can't afford that. Like, no, we can't do that. My oldest is a little wise now, you know, just going like, oh, my parents are paying full tuition at Columbia and like, don't seem to mind. But like my middle, who's applying to college right now, she's just like, oh, like the University of Arizona, like they want me to apply for this like full tuition scholarship. You know, I really think I should do that. And I think I need to work during college. And I'm like, okay, I don't want you to work during college. Yeah. So, but it's very sweet.
My daughter went to U of A on a scholarship, on the full tuition scholarship.
I love U of A, and it was actually a really, really good choice for her. She spent the entire last summer in Tucson doing neuroscience research and just fell in love with the campus. They have such a great pre-med program. She thinks she wants to be pre-med. And so it was like definitely a possibility, but she actually just got accepted to Brown on Friday. And so she's going to go to Brown.
Congratulations. Thanks. Yeah. So she wants maybe she wants to be a physician. Who knows? I wonder where she could have picked up that dream from. Right.
Yep, I have no idea.
No idea where that could have happened. Yeah. You know, my middle daughter decided she wanted to go to the University of Binghamton. Right. We live here in Texas. Right. My daughter is going to a state school in New York. She got, you know, a scholarship for it. But like, that's where I went to college, in Binghamton. And I did everything I could to talk her out of it because it's gray, it's cold. And so like to this day, I'm trying to figure out why Binghamton. I'm sure I had nothing to do with it, right? but you did touch on something that's worth following up a little bit. You mentioned you had a scratch practice, more than one, right? Mm-hmm. And you bought the practice of the person who passed unexpectedly. Mm-hmm. And you had three other startups. If I was keeping score properly, or three startups, right? Three de novos and one.
Two startups and two purchases.
Okay, so two startups and two purchases. And as you mentioned, for most of us, like yourself, who had a startup of some sort, you know, like Dave Ramsey says, one day's rice and beans, the next day's beans and rice, mm-hmm. right? Like it is like, what bill am I not going to pay right now so that I can pay the bill I have to pay, right? Which makes the journey so much sweeter at the end when you get out of it. And like, you know, you can pay for college. And you're like, right. I truly do remember the days. And for my kids, it was the same. I was 44 when I went back. I had some kids that were young, one that was older. And, you know, you almost feel guilty in some respects, but not quite that much. But my question for you is this. Having two purchases and two de novos, and I know this is a complex question because it depends on area, age, mm-hmm. demographic, the whole nine yards. But you have an opportunity for a new office or a new doc out of school in a good community, and you have the opportunity of buying a practice and starting one from scratch. Which one do you choose if you could do it all over again?
Sort of depends.
I know. It's a tough one.
Yeah, it sort of depends, but I personally think it's always easier to buy a practice.
Agreed. But is that the choice you would make again? Because
buying a practice depends on the numbers.
There's all that stuff that goes with buying a practice, the existing team, the existing culture, the existing doctor, there's a lot there.
There is a lot there. I think people underestimate though, the goodwill, the value of the goodwill. So the fourth practice that we purchased was a disaster. I will tell you, it was an area that we really wanted to be in. There were a lot of misrepresentations by the seller. There was just a lot. I drove home crying every day that I went. I had patients yelling at me constantly. He failed to inform them that the transition was even happening. He was supposed to stick around and help with the transition. He did not. The treatment was not to the level that I would have treated people. For example, there were a ton of people who were given a 30-month estimate for comprehensive treatment that started with 12 primary teeth.
Oh, nice.
So, yeah.
Good. So realistic.
And so people were 60, 65 months into treatment. And then they would get irritated if when we started because their teeth hurt. And I was just like, I'm freaking doing something. You know, they were like, just retie, you know.
At the end of 65 months, then you had to look at them and go, okay, great. Now we're ready for phase two.
Now we're ready to start. So there was a lot. There was a lot with that practice. And a lot of it, like I should have done better due diligence. So I do blame myself for some of that. That being said, I always was grateful the next time the sibling started, you know, that we were able to, because this was our fourth practice, we had a lot of systems in place. So we were able to finally get those systems in place. People started to trust us. You know, we just spent a lot of time communicating. And then the next one would start and then the next one would start and they would refer their friends. And so I was just like, you know, I felt like the price of the practice was fairly reasonable. So when I think about how much it cost to build it out, I kind of go, well, you know, it was already built out, which is good, you know? And so, and then we get like sort of the next sibling starting and stuff. So I kind of saw the value in that. And, you know, now I look at sort of what we're producing in that office, you know, 4 years later and I'm like, oh, like we're probably producing double what this guy was producing. So we were able to do that. And some of it was due to some of the goodwill that we personally built with those families who then started the next sibling and the next sibling. And,
nice.
You know, when you start from scratch, you know, I kind of said like when we started our second scratch practice, you know, it's like the pain of childbirth, you forget about the pain. And then you start it again. And you're like, oh yeah. Like there's a lot of waiting around. There's a lot of waiting around, you know, just sitting there all day. And I have stuff to do now on the computer. Like, I mean, I can fill my day with stuff on the computer, which is just like, oh my gosh, like, you know, when are the patients going to come? You know, when are the doctors going to start referring, especially in like more established practices when you go and you visit general dentists and they're just like, I've been referring to Dr. X for 20 years. Like, why would I even bother with referring to you? I've been happy. And right. So kind of breaking into that takes a while, you know, patients need to sort of find you on their own and then you can show that you do a good job and build those relationships. So that takes a lot more time. So I loved starting practices from scratch, but you know, given a better situation than maybe what my last practice was, I think I would choose something established. I think new grads sort of underestimate some of the goodness that can come from existing practices. When they're just like, oh, well, I can just build something out from scratch for the same amount of money. And I'm like, but there's something with having like money coming in already and siblings and all of that kind of stuff. Like, you know, they're both hard. There's no easy way.
Amen. That was of everything you said, like, that's the one thing that just resonates so much with me is that, you know, when you come out of ortho residency and whether you buy a practice or start one from scratch, and even if you're not fresh out of ortho residency, you're not going to have your dream practice unless you kill yourself. Right? Yeah. Like that's the biggest kicker is, you know, you speak to young orthodontists out there. Oh, I have an exit strategy. You haven't even entered, practice yet. And, you know, I tell this to everybody. If the first 5 to 7 years of your practice are not you living, breathing, drinking, eating, sleeping your practice, you might get where you want to get eventually just by pure happenstance, or you're in the right place at the right time and you just got lucky. But everybody I know who's successful, and you and I know, we get through our 20 names of people who we respect and know who have amazing practices with great culture today. Every one of them, yourself included, killed themselves to get to where they need to be. And I think a lot of the younger orthodontists come in thinking like, oh, I'll just take the keys. And, you know, at 5 o'clock, I got a tea time, right? I'm going to run home. And, you know, and no, it doesn't quite work that way, folks.
No.
And again, at the end of the day, I think both have their advantages. And it was great to hear your opinion. And I think the one thing that you said also that really resonates is, it's never to be undervalued money coming in already, right? Because you and I both, tell me, did you ever hear the phone ring when you first started? Did you ever hear the phone ring and you ran over the front desk just to hear, is it a new patient? Like, is it a new patient? Like, I'm talking to my front desk while she's answering the phone and she's like trying to shoo me away. And I'm like, new patient? Is it a new patient?
So the funny thing is my dad loaned us some money to open up our first practice because the bank wouldn't give us the full amount that we needed to open up our practice. So my dad would drop in every single day and talk to our front office person and so show me the list of new patients today. Every single day.
He really would.
Yes. And so, you know, it's funny that you say that because I'm like, yeah, I didn't do that as much because I would like try to avoid my dad coming in, like, you know, asking Marsha, who was our front desk person. So she learned just to have the printout waiting for him to examine to make sure that, you know, he was going to get his money back.
That is, I got to say, I know you love your dad. That is some undue pressure to put on somebody. Like your daughter, you're coming into her practice and saying, let me see the list of patients. Because, by the way, I'm not going to say it out loud, but because she owes me money.
Yep. Like,
there's a lot there.
I mean, it was out of the goodness of his own heart. He wanted us to do well, but it was hysterical. I mean, my dad's a control freak. I mean, it has served him well in his practice. I try to teach doctors not to be as controlling as my father, so they have a little bit better work-life balance. But yeah.
Hello there, entrepreneurs. Sign up for the Orthopreneurs 24 Summit now. We took over an entire ship just for us. And here's the thing. It's selling out so fast right now that the room types are selling out. So if there's a particular type of cabin you want, You better get on to opsummit2024.com right now and sign up. And why are people signing up? Because of three reasons. Number one, it's a boat, which means you can bring your team, your family. Yes, there's a kids club. And yes, there's an adults only pool. Number two, the lineup I have is going to be spectacular. These are not people you're going to see on any other stage anywhere. I dug deep to find the best to help you live your best, most profitable, most productive, personal and practice lives. And they're going to blow you away. And number three, the type of cabin you want is limited. This is not a hotel where most of the rooms are the same. If you want one with a balcony, they're selling out. You want an inside room to save money? They're selling out. So go to opsummit2024.com right now. Sign up for a cruise September 18th to 22nd, and you will have the best CE time of your life. And now, back to the podcast.
That's great. And I think the last point of this whole conversation here is, you know, when I asked you the question, would you do a startup or would you buy again? The one part we're discounting is the fact of, and again, maybe it doesn't affect you, but it affects me, is age. When I backpacked Europe, right, I was 22 years old and I slept on the floors of trains. I never paid for hotels because I would sleep at night on the train going from one station to another and then get up in the morning and sleep next to a tree if I needed to. But in my 40s and 50s, there's no way I'm taking that trip because I couldn't physically, even if I wanted to, my body can't handle that. And I think part of my response to startup or purchase is a lot of that is that I don't know if I can physically muster the necessary strength to continue running a new startup at age 56 for me. I don't know if I could honestly put that kind of energy in for 5 to 7 years to build it. You know, it's just different as you get older. You know, it's like my friends who have two kids going off to college and God bless them, then they have a baby. I'm like, oh my God. I'm like, you're 55 years old, dude. This is the moment.
I'm too tired for that.
Do you agree with that? Like that there's a part of that energy wise that plays into the equation?
I think so. And I think we just have gotten, you know, spoiled a little bit too.
Yeah.
You know, like, I mean, it just is like, we're tired and a little bit spoiled and just kind of like, you know, I paid my dues. There were a lot of dues to be paid.
There were a lot of dues to be paid, right? Like, and that's, a conversation of itself is you meet ortho residents who are going to GORP, right? They just got an ortho. They're there for 1 month and they're going to GORP and they get the keys to the kingdom, right? Dave Paquette out of Charlotte, you know, he was around for a while. He's retired now. He took me aside. He goes, you know why they give you the keys? You know why it's so hard to get into ortho? He says, because they're giving you the keys. Like you have an amazing life ahead of you down the road and they're welcoming you in with GORP. And I think residency, as I told everybody when I joined was, you know, I said to all my co-residents, I go, this is going to be the easiest 2 to 3 years of your life. Like it'll never get easier than this because you're going to go where they tell you to go. You're going to do what they tell you to do. And if you do that, everything works out perfect. But once you get out, that's when the real fun begins. Like that's where, and like you said, that's where you pay your dues. And again, Chris Feldman posted the other day in Entrepreneurs and said, we were talking about like work-life balance and all this stuff. And he said, for him, a sweet spot is 3 days, right? Mm-hmm. 3 days of practice a week is his sweet spot. And he finds it's great. And it's true. Like we have a profession where you could, if you wanted to, put in 3 days a week, have an amazing practice, like an amazing practice, make an amazing living and work less than the number of days you have off. And never sweat. And
well, I mean, you're still working from home. Like, let's be honest. Like,
we are.
You know, it's 3 clinic days.
Yeah.
But we've had this conversation with our daughter because she thinks she wants to go into investment banking and private equity and all of that kind of stuff. And I'm like, are you insane? Like, what did you not witness this? Did you just not witness this your entire life? Like, do you see like the lifestyle that we were able to give you? You know, the amount of time, like mom was at a lot of your stuff, not everything, but you know, a lot of your stuff, like we were able to, you know, really kind of try to balance things out and you want to work 100 hours a week. And I mean, her answer is basically, yes, I do. And so I'm like, okay, whatever.
Yep. You've been warned.
Yeah, exactly.
You've been warned. And my oldest would have been a great orthodontist. Like she's got all the, And for a period of time, I tried to convince her, like, hey, do you want to do this? And she thought maybe she would. And then she says, yeah, but do I have to deal with blood? I'm like, no, we never see blood. Like, blood is like we realistically, you know, as a restorative doc, I saw blood a lot, right? Mm-hmm. When I reach my hand out and someone hands me a scalpel and I make an incision, you know, to deglove a maxilla to take out teeth for an immediate denture, there's a little blood. And it didn't bother me. But she was like, in residence, like in dental school, seeing blood there, like anatomy was enough for her to go, I'm done. I'm not. I don't want to. I'm going to go into business, what have you. So I got nobody in my house taking over the legacy, if you will. And that's just fine.
We don't either.
No,
at least our son, maybe. But he thinks he wants to be an engineer at this point. He's only a freshman in high school, so he's got time. But for the most part, nobody has expressed interest.
Well, engineering and ortho really are very similar.
I've discussed that one.
Yeah. Well, I guess we'll find out, right?
We'll find out.
So you did touch on something which was great. You know, you mentioned the word mom there. And you know, one of the things that, you know, I marveled at my own mom was the ability to do what she was doing alone, right? She had nobody. And this is back in the 70s where I heard the stories of the things that guys did in the workplace.
Yep.
The terms they use, the pejorative terms, the pats on the behind, the true crazy glass ceiling that existed for a female attorney in the 1970s. And my mother did it all with a smile on her face, taking care of her kids. And at the same time, her sister became a corporate attorney around the same time. So here I had these two super powerful, amazing women as role models for me, rising up the ranks. And just so I'm always very, very sensitive to the way people portray their work life, what have you. And I am truly amazed at moms in the workplace, whether they are serving food at a diner, which, by the way, I have to say, to me, that is, I've had sleepless nights thinking about not female orthodontists, not because they don't deserve it, but that woman who has no money in her bank account, literally none, a husband or a baby daddy who's gone. And she's got three, like, let's look at our assistants. Great examples. And if they don't work, they don't eat.
Yeah.
They don't have a roof over their head. I could not imagine waking up with that kind of pressure on my head on a day-to-day basis, year after year, decade after decade. It's remarkable to me. And for those women in the ortho field, you've created a safe haven for them with women in ortho. And I'd love to hear a little bit about and share your story. How did it come about? When did it come about? And then we'll pick up some questions after that.
Okay. So it's kind of funny. I'm even going to kind of talk about it at the WIO conference this year because it's our fifth conference. So I'm kind of I'm calling it the Eras Lecture a la Taylor Swift, right? I'm going to kind of go over all of the lectures that I've given over the years. But kind of talking about like the beginning of WIO. And honestly, like I was just blogging about orthodontics. And a colleague said, hey, you know, there were only a couple of ortho groups at the time. And I was peripherally aware of them, but not really super involved in them. And somebody said, you know, there's no group just for female orthodontists. They sort of have a special set of circumstances that they're dealing with. And you have been blogging and stuff, and I think you should do it. And I'm like, what? Like I wouldn't even know where to begin. But then I jumped right in. I started it. Ben Burris was running Ortho 101 and he put a post, hey, Courtney, open this women's group. And all of a sudden a flood of people came over. And the very first post, and I was kind of like, I'm not sure what I'm going to do with this sort of thing. And the very, very first post was, you know, this is a safe place, right? Like, do any of you guys go into your car at lunch and just cry because you're so overwhelmed?
Oh my gosh.
And that sort of set the tone for what WIO has really turned into, which is a safe place to really be vulnerable. So after about a year, I said, you know what, this needs to be a doctor only forum. So I asked all the consultants to leave. I asked all of the wives of orthodontists who were sort of in there to leave. Anybody who was not an orthodontist left or was reported and kicked out. I had to be kind of mean at that point because some people really wanted to stay, but you know, it just became so personal that I was just like, okay, this needs to be an ortho only group. And I totally respect the wives of male orthodontists, and the consultants have great things to say. and assistants and office managers are phenomenal as well. But this needed to be orthodontists only. And so this group sort of grew into like an incredibly supportive space. And so, yeah, like there are posts about what do I do? Like my child is addicted to video games was a recent one. What am I supposed to do?
I'd love to hear that. Give me the answers to that one.
There was no real good answer, but he's like, oh, I feel your pain. You know what I mean?
Unfortunately, right now, Courtney, a lot of people listening have that same issue.
Yes, they do. And there are things that like everybody else is dealing with, right. Like, you know, this person's calling in sick, this person's always late, or I don't feel like my startup is growing as quickly as I want it to. But some other things, like I have a male partner, I feel like the team always defers to him. How do I like assert myself as an equal to him? That was a recent one, especially, you know, when you're a woman dealing with a team that is predominantly women, there's an interesting dynamic there. A lot of them see you as a friend, and it can complicate things when you are trying to correct them or you're trying to enforce the rules. It can be an issue that where they take it much more personally. Like I have a friend that they would take it much more personally from me than they would take it from him just because of gender and because of the way that, you know, we interact with each other.
I've heard that a lot.
Yeah.
There's still
sexual harassment. I had a ortho rep when I was in residency tell me I had great tits.
Nice.
Yeah.
And that was lovely. I apologize because I hear stories like this. Right. I hear story and I never doubt them. I agree. I believe them 100%. But it's to use my favorite word from The Princess Bride. It is inconceivable to me.
Yeah.
I did just as a quick aside yesterday. I don't want to disclose any names or what have you, because it wasn't confidence. But someone I know who is at a dental school told me that one of their classmates was brought into a room by a professor who said, hey, I just need you to come look at something. And there on the computer was porn. And I'm sitting here going,
yeah,
I mean, speechless, literally speechless, that someone would say that to you in a dental school and think that somehow this is okay. Like, forget ramifications. Let's assume nothing ever happened. Where are these people raised? Like, what?
Oh, I know.
How are they not in jail? Like,
I know. Like,
did anything happen to them? Were they dismissed from their job?
They don't work anymore in the ortho field that I'm aware of. It was at the AO. It wasn't at a dental school. I mean, my husband was just obviously furious and, you know, wanted to beat him up. But as, you know, many people do, I just kind of wanted to move on. I didn't want to deal with it. It was just something I just moved on from. Just, yes, that happened. No, we never used their brackets or their products. They were sort of like blackballed forever, obviously.
Right.
But, you know, It happens a lot to a lot of women, and a lot of them just say, you know, like, once again, like, I'm not going to be believed. I'm going to be blamed for it in some way. You know, yeah. I just want to move on from this. I don't really want to rock the boat. It's hard to speak up. They will always blame you, right? Like, there was a student at the University of Alabama. I will never forget it because I read this article when my oldest was applying for college, and she was at a bar. She got picked up by a man. They were both very drunk. He was very influential. There's a big article about this. He took her back to her home. He had sex with her. She was not able to consent. She woke up, was like, where am I?
Obviously, not drugged. Realized, just drunk, but not drugged.
Drunk, but not drugged, but just so drunk that she couldn't consent. It was rape.
Okay.
And woke up. Realized where she was, that she didn't know where she was, and was just like, oh my God, like this guy like raped me. I want to leave. Stole some money out of his jeans to take a cab. And the Alabama laws were such that she was arrested for theft. She couldn't prove that she fought hard enough to call it rape. And she ended up killing herself. So women hear these stories and just go like, I don't want to deal with it. And so, you know, it just sort of, it is what it is. So for me, I was like, okay, my children are never going to Alabama, but, you know, so this horrible comment that was made to me, like, I could have spoken up and whatever. And people think I'm really loud and powerful and all of that kind of stuff. But like for me, I was like, I just want to move on from this. I don't want to deal with it. I don't want to deal with it at all. Like, I don't want to deal with the consequences that could come back on me if I say something. And so that's it. So, but going back to WEO.
And by the way, I'm coming back to this after WEO, because I want to hear about WEO and the meeting and all the great stuff that goes with it. But, you know, I do have a couple of questions for you that I want education. I want everybody out there to be educated a little bit. So let's talk about WEO. And
So the group is great. And so, and like some men will say like, oh, you're reverse sexist and all this stuff because you have this group. And we don't hate men. Like, there's no bashing of men in this group. But they're literally, the last two posts that really struck me recently were one woman who just found out that her fetus is not viable. And she needed information about whether she could have more tests before she had a DNC. And one woman who found out her husband was cheating on her. Like, that's the kind of stuff that like can get posted in WEO. Luckily, we have the anonymous now, so people can be anonymous, but people feel free enough to be able to respond to those messages. And as practicing orthodontists, as women of reproductive age, we are dealing with a lot of stuff when it comes to reproduction. You know, we are dealing with like IVF and miscarriage and stillbirths and pumping and like, and all of these things that are very emotional on top of what we're doing in practice. And so the whole thing is not like that. Like, obviously we deal with like, oh my gosh, this team member constantly shows up late. I don't know what to do. But after like, I realized the vibe of this group was so personal. I'm like, we have to get together. And that's why we did the WEO conference. A couple of reasons we did it. Like, people wanted to meet. They just kept saying like, I want to meet these people. I want to meet these people. Like, yep. Mentorships were being grown from just comments. And they were like, I want to see this person in person. Like, I want to spend time with them. And then the other thing that I noticed was a lot of the main conferences at the time had predominantly male speakers. And there were all these phenomenal women speaking up in the WEO group who had like great business advice and great practices that nobody had ever heard of before. And I was like, hey, I'm going to invite, like, Nicole Wax spoke at the very first WEO. Nobody had ever heard of her. And she basically read her speech off of her phone because she was so nervous. She's like, who am I to be speaking? And I'm like, I know you should speak. Yeah. And so I'm just giving women like that opportunities to present. You didn't have to have any experience, but there were so many women there. I don't feel like I have anything to say. And I'm like, I know you have something to say because you say it in the group. We want to hear from you. And so predominantly female speakers sharing their stories. And once again, sharing their stories from I grew like Nicole, this badass business, to women who shared their breast cancer stories. And so it's just all across the board. And the vibe of the WEO conference is, you know, just very personal. You can go to that conference and not know a soul and be invited to dinner immediately with a group of people. And so that's what's so cool about it.
Yeah. It's a tribe. It's beautiful. It's a tribe where everybody feels included and feels they can just speak about anything that's on their mind. Yep. And that's the name of the game because, you know, one of my recent meetings for the Orthopreneurs RD group, I asked everybody in the group, I said, who here, raise your hands if your primary goal in 2024 is to make more money. And three hands went up. Mm-hmm. Of the 85 or 90 people in the room, all the remaining hands went up when I said, who wants to reduce their stress?
Yep.
Right? Everybody right now is stressed. This is not your father's ortho world that he worked. Like, again, I got out of school in 92. So I've been in dentistry for 31 years. And even I can tell you the world we live in today is immeasurably more stressful than the one that I came out of dental school in 1992. And I watched my dad practice before that for years. And it's so stressful. People feel alone. People feel unattached. People feel like they've got problems that are just unique to them. When in fact, so many people are having the same problem. And what you've done is brought people together and for a lot of healing. Can't even imagine how many lives you've saved. people being there together. There's a story in particular, like there are things that we as men just can't relate to, right? Mm-hmm. I don't want to say relate. We can relate. We've just never, ever experienced it. So it's foreign to us, some of the struggles. And it's on the podcast that I did with her, but I remember Mo Kuda. When Mo talked about her day from hell, that in my worst nightmares, because there was some reproductive issues related to a team member leaving, to just so much stuff in one day. The fact that she got herself up and walked back in the clinic after what she had been experiencing, there's no guy who's going to feel what she went through. Because, again, I don't want to get into her story because it's her story and it's on the podcast. Everybody wants to listen to it. And I don't feel I have the right to dive into it. But it was unbelievable to deal with it. And again, I just, you know, kudos for what you're doing here with women. And
I had a miscarriage when I was in residency. And at that point, you could not really talk about being pregnant in residency because professors had told us basically you are wasting a man's spot if you decide to have children because you're only going to work part time.
So I was
keeping it secret and I was actively miscarrying while I was treating patients in the clinic. And I know for a fact I was not the only woman at the University of Michigan who did that exact same thing.
Heartbreaking. Yeah. Heartbreaking. And again, hopefully the times are changing. And that's what I wanted to go back to you with a little bit about some of the stories you were talking about, where that, you know, like I said, I remember the days with my mom, you know, guys almost had free rein because if she spoke out, even as an attorney, nobody was going to listen. It didn't really matter, you know, and women suffered in silence and the glass ceiling, everything was horrible. Do you feel that in the 7 years or so that WHEO's been around, since you started it, there's been some crazy stuff that's gone on out there, right? Harvey Weinstein, just to mention one of an immeasurable number of crazy, I say unbelievable because I can't believe the things that went on, both against, you know, in some cases with Harvey, it was men and women, right? The Brendan Fraser situation. Do you feel like the workplace for female orthodontists or women orthodontists is much better today than it was, say, 7 years ago? Do you feel like there's a lot less harassment? I'm not talking about the team because, you know, that's each team has its own culture. But in terms of outside forces coming in and doing what we talked about to women, do you feel like it's a safer environment now? Or do you feel that it is exactly the same as just hidden?
Well, I mean, there's always going to be predators out there, like no matter what. There's always going to be predators. There were in the 1950s, there will be in the 2050s. Like there's always going to be that. I think women are, I'm not giving myself credit for this. Like, you know, the fact that WHEO exists, I think has helped in that we are becoming more powerful in the orthodontic profession. I think, you know, basically nobody wanted to sponsor the first WHEO. I was told that women orthodontists, like they don't buy. Like they're not that important, basically. It's not worth the sponsorship for a women's meeting. Even from the AAO, from people that I liked. I tried to connect WHEO to the AAO and they're like, we tried women's meetings and like we ended up sunsetting them. But I think the fact that we are becoming a larger and larger percentage of dental school population and ortho residency population, that people are finally waking up and saying, oh my gosh, like it's actually going to be majority women soon. We need to pay attention to them. Like we should take them seriously. So I think that there's a shift there. My daughter that's going to Brown, she did her AP research project. So there's this class called AP research and you do research the whole year. And she did it on the gender disparity of invited speakers at the AAO. And so I got the names from the AAO and she did all of the research. And it was a huge disparity. And what was really interesting was when she compared it to, and it's going to get published in the AJODO. So I'm very proud of her, 17 years old, going to be published in the AJODO. But when she compared the number of ortho research award winners to the number of invited speakers, there was a huge disparity. And she looked at the fact that the research award winners are judged blind. You don't know who you're judging. And invited speakers, you obviously always know who you're picking. And so it was like, I don't really know her data that well. 67% of research award winners were female. Wow. And it was like, 18% of invited speakers were female. And so she was kind of saying like, they're very qualified. Obviously they're winning research awards, like whatever. So anyways, the AAO is aware of this study. And now they're making a big push to get women to apply for speakers positions. They're making a lot of pushes to include women in the pictures of speakers when they're asking people to apply. And so I think that that little thing that my 17-year-old did made a difference in waking people up to say, yes, they are an important group that we need to pay attention to. So yes, it's getting better. I think but yes, there will always be people who do like what happened to that resident and say, hey, why don't you look at this dirty movie with me? Or, you know, I really like the way you look, or make inappropriate advances, because that's just the reality.
It's unfortunate.
As the father of daughters, I know, you know, there's always that fear.
Yeah.
That something's going to happen to your daughter.
You always worry, right? About all your kids. But again, I'll say it here publicly. I dare anybody to do that. I don't dare them, right? But, you know, that girl in Alabama, it would have ended a lot sooner had it been my daughter. You know, and I would be behind bars.
Yeah.
I would be behind bars. No question right now. I would be behind bars and my daughter would be alive. But again, you know, I understand and respect, and everybody has the same family support at the end of the day. And what you're doing is huge and it's great. And I think 50% of women today I think 50% of orthodontists today, if I'm not mistaken, like the younger generation, the millennial, when I say younger, you know, I'm an old Gen Xer, right?
Yeah.
But I think the millennials and younger, I think 50% are women coming out of ortho residency.
Yeah. And it's actually increasing. It's an interesting thing because there's more women going to college than men, which I don't think is a good thing either. Like, I mean, I have a son, like I want him to go to college. The boys are different than girls. Like, and that's just a whole different thing, you know, when it comes to raising them. And, you know, traditional school is sort of geared more towards girls and, you know, helping girls along, where if you have like kind of a hyperactive boy, it's very difficult for them to succeed. And I don't think that that's right either. My son goes to an all boys school, actually. And I'm thrilled with the fact that he goes to an all boys school and that most of his teachers are male and that he has those people who understand him as a boy better, because he's not a girl and he shouldn't have to be forced to act like a girl. Women shouldn't be overtaking higher education. Like, it should be equal for all of us.
Yeah. The world is changing. And you know, some of the changes are not so great. Some of the changes are amazing.
Yeah.
And this is certainly falls under the category of amazing. And so before we wrap up, please tell everybody out there, is there still time for people to sign up for the WEO meeting?
Because I know absolutely. You can still sign up for the WEO meeting, and men can come. Ben Fishbein came to the WEO meeting. He loved it. So it's not that like you're not allowed to come. No. So you can still sign up for the meeting. It's always over MLK weekend this year. I mean, obviously, so it's like a month away.
A month away as we record this, folks.
It may be after by the time
happens at, which I don't think this is going to come out after MLK weekend. But yeah, sorry, folks. Cat's out of the bag.
But next year we're going to be in Orlando. Like, we're going to do the JW Marriott in Orlando, which is a phenomenal hotel. So it's definitely family friendly. I couldn't believe how nice the facility is there. So if you want an excuse to go down to Orlando, or you're an East Coast doc and you never wanted to fly all the way out to Phoenix, register now. The prices are only going to go up.
Nice. Where do they register? Where do they go?
Okay. WIOconference.com. WIOconference.com. You can register for either one of the meetings. Nice. And then we didn't really get to talk about the office manager workshop that much, but officemanagerworkshop.com too. Orthodontic office manager. And you want to know how we run four offices. You want to learn about delegation. You want to learn about that kind of stuff. Like, you've got somebody who's in the trenches, our office manager, who's doing an amazing job, who's going to teach you the day-to-day how to be an office manager. It's a great two full day course. So it's not just like the numbers and all of that kind of stuff. It's literally like, how do we deal with employees? How do we deal with delegation? Like, how do I know that this office is running healthy? It's we always get phenomenal reviews on that course.
And by the way, I want to apologize to you, because I really do want to talk about the office manager workshop. And, you know, we've gone almost 50 minutes here, and I wouldn't take back one word of what we spoke about to this point. I think everything we spoke about, there were some really great conversations in there. And so maybe, just maybe, we can get you back on at some point down the road and we can really do a deeper dive into the office manager workshop and and talk more about the actual day to day in ortho.
Yeah.
Now that we've talked about all the, I think the issues we spoke about are really important related to women in ortho. I don't think they get enough attention. You know, it's great what you're doing, and I'm glad we're going to get to shine a little light on it here. But it's kind of hard and difficult for me as a dad of, you know, two girls and a boy and a husband of 30 years for me to stand up and go, okay, women's rights. Like, I can support and be there, but it just doesn't resonate the same way as when you do and your group does. So
yeah, but I appreciate it. I told my son that I think my husband is a huge feminist. And I told my son, I'm like, I really want you to get a t-shirt that says, this is what a feminist looks like. Because you don't have to be a man or don't have to be a woman to be a feminist. Like,
Gloria Steinem,
and we're all just looking for equal rights.
Amen. In every way. In every way. And so, yeah, hopefully you'll take me up on my rain check to get you back so we can dive deep into it. I'd love to do that at some point. I know you're a busy lady, but we'll find some time. And maybe even I'll end up at a WEO conference someday.
There you go.
Because I would love to see it. So.
Yeah.
I just want to say thank you from the bottom of my heart for doing this today. It means the world to me, and it's way overdue. And continued success with WEO and the conference, and just keep doing what you're doing. I can speak for me personally. I really appreciate it. I know a lot of the women in orthodontics who circle in my orbit also appreciate it a ton. So thank you.